Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 10. Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Text 3. O my worshipable Lord, because of the seed of lusty desires, which is the root cause of material existence, is within the core of the hearts, you have sent me to this material world to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee. Did we read this purport the other day? Do you remember? No. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu has given considerable discussion about Nitya Siddha and Sadhana Siddha devotees. Nitya Siddha devotees come from Vaikuntha to this material world to teach, by their personal example, how to become a devotee. The living entities in this material world can take lessons from such Nitya Siddha devotees and thus become inclined to return home back to Godhead. A Nitya Siddha devotee comes from Vaikuntha upon the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and shows by his example how to become a pure devotee. Anya bilashita shunyam. In spite of coming to this material world, the Nitya Siddha devotee is never attracted by the allurements of material enjoyment. A perfect example is Prahlad Maharaj, who was a Nitya Siddha, a Mahabhagavat devotee. Although Prahlad was born in the family of Hiranyakashipu, an atheist, he was never attached to any kind of materialistic enjoyment. Desiring to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee, the Lord tried to induce Prahlad Maharaj to take material benedictions, but Prahlad Maharaj did not accept them. On the contrary, by his personal example, he showed the symptoms of a pure devotee. In other words, the Lord himself has no desire to send his pure devotee to this material world, nor does a devotee have any material purpose in coming. When the Lord himself appears as an incarnation within this material world, he is not allured by the material atmosphere, and he has nothing to do with material activity. Yet by his example, he teaches the common man how to become a devotee. Similarly, a devotee who comes here in accordance with the order of the Supreme Lord shows by his personal behavior how to become a pure devotee. A pure devotee, therefore, is a practical example for all living entities, including Lord Brahma. Om agena timirandasya genanjana shalakaya chakshun militanyena tasmai shri guruve namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. When we want to analyze our situation and get to the bottom of our predicament, which I hope you all want to do, in other words, rather than just dealing with superficial aspects of your existence, why not get to the root of your whole presence in this world? The root of your endeavors, the root of your struggles, your expectations, your hopes, your dreams, your ambitions. What's at the root of it all? What's making you tick? What is making you go forward with desires and plans? The crux of the matter is described in this verse. Samsara bijeshu. The samsara bij. The root cause of our being present in this material world. That root cause is in the heart. Hridaya Granthi. The hard knot in the heart. You take two pieces of rope, knot them, then again knot them, again knot them, again knot them. That's what's going on in the heart. Attachment to matter. Attachment to wanting to enjoy matter. Finding peace there. That means rebellion against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We reject the spiritual world. We reject the spiritual rasas. And we seek to squeeze out from the material world satisfaction, fulfillment. Prahlad Maharaj is praying to Lord Nrisingadev. Oh, my worshipful Lord, my Prabhu, because of the seed of lusty desires that samsara bij, it's the seed of lust, it's there in the heart. It makes you do so many things and think so many things and see so many things, hallucinate because of that samsara bij, that seed of lusty desires, which is the root cause of material existence. It's there in the heart. It's causing trouble. It's causing false expectations, false hopes, false striving, false goals, false achievements, false conceptions. What are we going to do about that samsara bij, that root cause, that seed of material existence, which is lusty desires in the core of the heart? How are we going to deal with that seed and make it so it doesn't function, it doesn't sprout any more than it already has? How to get rid of that seed completely? Do we care enough for ourselves to make this our lifetime career? Or is it just a side pursuit? Yeah, the samsara bij. Right. Yeah. We'll deal with that gradually on the side. But the real thing in life is me and my plans and my wants, my hankerings. No, the real thing in life is to attack that samsara bij with a lifetime plan. I'm going to get free from this hankering to enjoy matter. Lusty desires doesn't simply mean in relation to flesh, although that is predominant, as stated by Srila Prabhupada in the previous purport. Materialistic life, he writes, means attachment to the body and everything in relationship to the body. This attachment is based on lusty desires for sense gratification, specifically sexual enjoyment. Kamais taistaya hitagana. When one is too attached to material enjoyment, he is bereft of all knowledge. Hitagana. So it's not that it's an innocent thing to be attached to material enjoyment. Yeah, that just, you know, happens to be my thing. I'm attached to material enjoyment. Big deal, you know? Yeah, that's the way it naturally is. Well, if you say that's the way it naturally is, then you must accept the natural consequence of being attached to material enjoyment. That is, you're bereft of all knowledge. You can't figure out what's going on. Nor do you care, even. We were discussing last night at our discussion group the statement by one British intellectual of a few hundred years ago. Better to be Socrates and dissatisfied than a pig satisfied. In other words, better to be a wise person, even though you're dissatisfied, than to be a pig that's satisfied. Now, the contemporary opinion on that would be satisfied no matter what. Whether you're a pig or act like a pig, it doesn't matter. Get the satisfaction. If wallowing in the mud makes you happy, wallow in the mud. If eating anything and everything satisfies you, go for it. The main thing is to be satisfied for the moment. What's the use in being wise if you don't have immediate satisfaction? But you see, the so-called dissatisfaction of a truly wise person is a transitory state. You see, first you become dissatisfied, if you're a bit intelligent, with the course of material existence, the false propositions, the false hopes, the endless frustrations and letdowns, the lack of your ability to fulfill yourself. You chase one dream after another, one relationship after another, one ambition after another. This'll do it. I think now, finally, my heart will be at peace. Doesn't happen. In fact, not only does it not happen, but you get kicked in the face again and again and again. So, all this endeavor comes from the samsara bija, the seed of lusty desires in the core of the heart that propel the wheel of repeated birth and death. Because of attachment to material enjoyment, you lose all your knowledge and even your ability to properly analyze yourself and your life. Those are the consequences. Now, the so-called state of dissatisfaction of a wise person, a truly wise person, that's temporary, it's transitory, because first, after the stage of being frustrated by material life, you next move to the platform of attraction, positive attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Gita is not just about you're supposed to feel frustration toward material life. That's the beginning of wisdom. You notice something's not right. Something's not working. Everything is always, the promise is this, but it's always this. If you're a human being, you must be pessimistic about material life. That is the beginning of intelligence. If you're not pessimistic about material life, that means animal life. Of course, people will say, so what? If I'm a pig and I'm satisfied, that's the main thing, to be satisfied, no matter how. And you may say, well, that's very lowly enjoyment as a pig. But if I don't know any better, then no problem. What you don't know won't hurt you. The whole point is to feel at the moment in whatever state you're in. Never mind that there could be something better. Why should you worry about that? If the pig feels good in the mud, great. Why should the pig think there's something much better than this? Just enjoy the moment. So while you're saying what you don't know won't hurt you, if you don't know there's better pleasure than a pig in the mud, then what's the big deal? But Krishna is constantly trying to give you information. There's something so much better. But because of attachment to material enjoyment, you can't hear. You're just overwhelmed by the present sensations. Oh, feel that mud. The farmer put a little water on the mud. Now it's cooling in the hot sun. You may think, that pig is an extreme example. There are other animals that are more classy and sophisticated. Like what? People sometimes become repulsed when you talk about material life in terms of pigs. Yes? Right, Michelle? It's not that bad, right? What's a more classy animal than a bird, right?
Bobcat.
Those are in North America, aren't they? Most ladies say they want to be a horse in their next life. Yes. They like the horse with the long hair, you know, the hair flying as the horse is galloping. Yes, I've done informal surveys, and most ladies say they want to be a horse. You know, a horse looks beautiful and, you know, sleek body and the hair, you know. Or else people say they want to be a bird because they like to fly, you know. The pig eats anything and everything. But still, the pig shares the same basic animal propensities with a horse or a bird. There's nothing really so sophisticated about material life. It's all about those four things. Now, when human beings simply dedicate themselves to their body and things in relation to the body, there's a price they pay. They lose knowledge. They can't understand their situation. They may be the topmost scientist in the world. They can't understand their situation. For example, someone may say, everything has come about by random chance. There's no design, there's no purpose to our existence. And then you may say, but doesn't that, how can you live without purpose? Then everything becomes empty. How can you be satisfied without a purpose? And the person can just say, so what if there's no purpose or no design? In a few hours, it's going to be lunchtime. I'm going to have a tasty meal. You get it? That's supposed to be a very powerful statement. So what if there's no purpose or design? You know, tonight I've got, you know, a night on the town planned. It all adds up, doesn't it? You don't understand, but that's the way most people think. Design or not, purpose or not, I got something good in store for my senses. How many of you all in your previous days, how many of you sat around all day wondering, what's the purpose? What's the design? No, you were out on the town as predators. So basically that means you were saying, so what if we don't understand this stuff for our senses right now? And the whole world pats you on the back. Well done. Excellent. It's like when Steve and I were going back to where we stayed. It was just 9 o'clock, and he was noticing, because he's from Invercargill, that he was noticing already the throngs of persons in their Friday night mood, you know? There's a certain mentality. It's out there. We're going to get it. Our senses are going to be satisfied no matter what. And we're going to leave our worries behind. We're going to become so wasted. Leave all that Monday through Friday strain behind. They were determined. It's there. We're going to do it. We've got money in our pockets. You can see this sense of urgency and expectancy. The guys and girls walking together and just, it's out there. Maybe some of you remember going on the prowl like that. Isn't there a sense of electricity in the air? It's there. And all the people there imagining in a group imagination, it's there, we're going to get it. All we need is to go through the necessary rituals in order to enter into this magical world. They all have to get intoxicated. When everyone gets intoxicated, then they perceive true happiness and they forget all their distresses. The world becomes right. The world becomes a good place. It becomes, you know, happy through intoxication. The price you pay for all that is you can't understand yourself. You'll readily agree, yeah, be a pig that's satisfied. Who wants to be a wise person who's not satisfied? A wise person's always got to think about this, think about that. Why is this? Why is that? That's no fun. It's like the bumper stickers I see on a few cars these days. Good girls don't have any fun. Nice persons finish last. try to understand what we are doing here, our humble service. We are trying to establish a different kind of culture, a culture based on devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a culture based on knowledge, devotion, purification. We need to make lifelong plans about how we're going to deal with that samsara bij, that seed of lusty desires in the core of the heart that causes you to take one birth after another. It's not an innocent thing to have this seed in your heart, you know. It causes so much distress, so much hallucination. What are our lifelong plans to deal with it? It's not just a passing thing, a little hobby on the side. Oh, yeah, the samsara bij, right, right. I deal with that, you know, a few moments every week. I think that sometimes our devotees, some of them, they really can't come to grips with the fact that you've got to work on yourself every day. It seems to be too much, maybe sometimes, doesn't it? Every day you got to work on yourself. Come on, give yourself a break. Get some enjoyment. Every day you got to work on yourself. Why? This is how fallen we are. Why? Why we got to work on ourselves every day? Aren't there better things to do? Just forget yourself for a while and enjoy. Then if that's called pig philosophy, we become insulted. Oh, these gross Hare Krishna examples. I mean, that's one of the things, you know. Why did Prabhupada speak in such, you know, gross terms? Well, things are much grosser than when, since Srila Prabhupada, you know, made those statements. The grossness has increased exponentially. So, I wonder, are our devotees actually afraid, or they think it's just too intimidating to work on yourself every day as your main career, to deal with that seed of material enjoyment in the heart, which is actually driving the whole process of material existence? It's not an innocent thing. Oh, yeah, I got material desires. You got material desires. Oh, yeah. It's not an innocent thing like that. You will pay. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying here that Lord Nrisingadeva, the Supreme Personality of God, has sent me here in this world to demonstrate what is a pure devotee. So everyone can learn by looking, by hearing about. That was the purpose of the Lord's apparently alluring Prahlad Maharaj with the offer of material benedictions. He wanted to demonstrate Prahlad's qualities. And in defense of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing that uninformed persons would wonder, why is God making life so difficult? Alluring Prahlad, inducing him to take material benefits. Prahlad explains, the Lord is so kind to his devotee, he could never induce the devotee to do something unbeneficial for him. Don't blame the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not making things difficult for Prahlad. He's simply making things easy for us by showing an example. Just see how Prahlad will respond to this inducement. Everyone watch. So instead of our thinking, why is the Supreme Lord provoking Prahlad in this way, causing undue temptation and stress? No. This is the Supreme Lord being merciful. Let's show all the other devotees what the standard is. So apparently I'm alluring Prahlad to take material benedictions, but actually I'm benefiting everyone so that everyone can see Prahlad's example as he refuses these material benedictions. And Prahlad knows that. He says, you're so kind to your devotee, my Lord, O Supreme Instructor, Akhila Guru, Supreme Instructor of the entire cosmos, Akhila Guru. You would never induce your devotee to do something unbeneficial. The answer is simply that you are alluring me to help others. Now, rather than our wasting time attributing some ill motive to the Supreme Lord, Let us look at where the real problem is. Where is the real problem? Prahlad says, on the other hand, those persons who desire some material benefit in exchange for devotional service, they can't be your pure devotees. They're actually just merchants, meaning they want profit in exchange for service. So Prahlad is saying, let's take the spotlight off of the Supreme Lord and his apparent inducement of Prahlad. Let's put that spotlight on the materialistic devotees and check them out. Generally, people are always wondering, if there's God, why did he do this? Why did he do that? Why would he do such a thing? Why did he allow suffering in this world? Why did he allow a tsunami to happen? On and on it goes. Someone was asking that last night. Why are we in this world? Why did God do it? Mm-hmm. So Prahlad is putting the spotlight where it belongs. He's shining it on you. Let's not question the Supreme Personality of God, his motivations. Let's question our own situation. Let's question our own stuff. On the other hand, one who desires some material benefit in exchange for devotional service cannot be your pure devotee. Indeed, he's no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. Next, we're going to find Prahlad establishing what is relationship in bhakti. Everyone likes relationships. Devotees always tell me, whenever you start talking about relationships, everyone wakes up and pays attention. Because there's such a yearning in the heart for relationships. And because relationships are under such siege these days, no one even knows, as we explained the other day, no one knows how to relate to each other anymore. But they can't give up the relationship quest. They don't know. The culture of relationships is gone. So here Prahlad is laying down the principles of relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's making it clear for you so you understand what's going on. Nothing murky, nothing quasi-mystical, or no foolish statements like, those who know don't say, those who say don't know. No, Prahlad is saying, here it is. This is the way the relationship is conducted. You're into relationships? All right, listen to this. Ashasano navai britja swaminya shisha atmana nasami brityata samyam ichchanyo raticha shisha. A servant who desires material profits from his master is certainly not a qualified servant or pure devotee. Similarly, a master who bestows benedictions upon his servant because of a desire to maintain a prestigious position as master is also not a pure master. So here, Prahlad is explaining. You, in the relationship, you look for the purity on both sides. The pure servant doesn't desire material profits from the master in exchange for service. And the pure master doesn't give out material benedictions just so the servant will keep worshiping him. Remember, Brahma is in the audience and he's listening. He was the one who gave her in the Kashyapa those benedictions. Those material benedictions. So Prahlad is clarifying the situation. The real master doesn't give out material benedictions just to hold on to his servants, because he wants the prestige of having servants. It is sometimes a quandary, a puzzle in Krishna's service, dealing with disciples. How much do you correct them? How much can you tell them really what they need to hear? Because how much do they really want to hear it? I notice, though, when the disciples want to hear something, they present themselves in that kind of way that I really want to hear. And when they don't want to hear it, they also can present themselves in that kind of way, kind of a superficial way, hide all the issues. And Jai Gurudev, Jai. Yes, all glories. It's always an art. Profound art. How to perceive the degree of which someone wants to hear something. They want to hear the truth. And always one has to question one's own self. How much would I want to hear the truth? How much would I want to hear reality? That's the wonderful thing about Srila Prabhupada's books. They always put you up against the wall. You have to shine a spotlight on yourself. Ooh. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. So yes, if we're going to seek to give incisive, relevant counsel to others, we have to take it ourselves. We have to be willing to put ourselves under the microscope and take a look at ourselves. Take a look at that samsara bij and deal with it. Now, I agree, it may seem impossible, that seed of material desire in the core of the heart. It may seem impossible to deal with. And you're right, by ordinary means, you can't deal with it. Many of you have experienced how the seed of samsara, the lusty material desires in the heart, just rattles you and just pops out of nowhere and attacks you and just sometimes plays hide and seek with you. It disappears for a while, you think, then it suddenly pops out of the shadows and jumps you. Ha ha! Or it tries to steadily wear you down day after day, chipping away at you, and you begin to wonder, how long can I hold out? Oh no! How are you going to cope with this samsara beach? It is true, materially, everything is impossible. You can't cope with it. Too powerful. But if you take shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you can conquer. For one who remembers Lord Chaitanya, difficult things become easy. For one who forgets Lord Chaitanya, easy things become difficult. Now, who is most qualified to receive Lord Chaitanya's mercy? Who knows? Huh? Yes. So, if you think you're the most fallen, then you're the most qualified to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So you have to present yourself to Lord Chaitanya in that way. I've got this samsara bij, these material desires in the core of my heart. Unless you rescue me, there's no hope for me. And you design your life so that you'll get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Then the impossible feat of getting rid of that samsara bij, it starts to happen. It's a career, though. It's not just some little hobby like gardening or something. Gardening or knitting or bowls or or being a weekend musician. No, it's full-on commitment. And what is at stake? You and your relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what's at stake. Got to understand what you're dealing with. You all are concerned with relationships, but your most important relationship is at stake every day. The whole world will object. What are you doing focusing on that relationship when there's so many other relationships? No, we are completely focused on a relationship with Krishna. That is what is at stake. And this is what Prahlad Maharaj is talking about in his depiction of the real relationship. How does it go on? this is so much more important than men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Prahlad is describing how to be a pure servant of the pure master. Let us turn to text 6. Aham takamas tvad bhaktas tvam cha swamyanupashreha nanyate havayo arto rajasevakayo eva. Prahlad is speaking here. He's declaring his... He's declaring his stance. This is how the relationship goes on. Aham, as far as I'm concerned, to indeed, akama, without material desire, tot bhakta, fully attached to you without motivation. And what about the Supreme Lord? Tvam cha swam yanupashreya. You are the Swami, the real master, anupashraya, without motivation. You don't become the master simply to give benedictions to maintain your prestigious position. O my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master, and I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. It's always good to clarify relationships. Whether they're familial, or whether it's business partners, romantic partners. All relationships need clarification. Employee and employer, just like Dwayne. He's working to clarify his relationship and his workplace, right? I want to work only 30 hours a week. Now, how do you feel about that? And I want to go traveling around the world with my guru later this year. So let's clarify the relationship here. Similarly, in the various liaisons, we can see when... some of the devotees there entering another phase of life. So they, you see them sitting at the tables and they're clarifying their relationship, the expectations, the hopes, the dreams. Trying to make everything for real and hopefully trying to arrange for their purification. So, just as in relationships within this world, it is always good to clarify them. Similarly, here you see Prahlad Maharaj clarifying so beautifully, so clearly, his relationship with the Supreme Lord. In the face of allurement, he's doing this. The Supreme Lord has said, take any material benediction you want. It's like last night when a young lady was telling us how she was so happy now because she had a 2-bedroom flat. So happy. And she didn't have to flat with others in terms of meeting their expectations. She could, supervise and be choosy about who would be her flatmate. She was so happy. Oh. I have my own zone, my own place. I'm so happy. I said, well, how do you pay for the flat? Oh, well, I pay for it through, student... student loans. But she called it something else which hid the real nature that it was a loan. Student support or something like that. Allowance? Student allowance, yeah. Student allowance. As if, she didn't need a loan in order to get the student allowance. No student allowance and I work. I said, well, about how much are you in debt already for your studies? Oh, $15,000. So here, in order to have her own zone, two-bedroom flat. Everything a 22-year-old young lady would want. Your own flat. You can pick your own flat, mate. Your place. She's got to work to pay for it and go in debt to pay for it. That she doesn't think about. And do you think she's going to be satisfied just being in a two-bedroom flat and having a flatmate? No, after a while, she'll start looking at the walls of the flat and saying, you know, there's got to be someone especially here for me to relate to. There's no peace in the material world. There's no freedom for material desires. One thing always leads to another. She's not going to be satisfied just looking at the walls of her flat, my zone, my home. No. That's just an imaginary peace that she's conceived of. After a while, it'll be off to something else. Because she was describing, you know, how you, what you do is you have a current circle of friends, and then you're always adding new acquisitions. She was very frank in describing it that way. You maintain your current circle, and there's always, you know, new acquisitions. Like a library, you know, has its, you know, current stock of books, and then there are always new acquisitions. So she said, yeah, that's the way it is. You know, you always, you know, pick up an acquisition here or there and add it into the collection. Now, will we be satisfied with Krishna? You have to gain enough experience of Krishna for yourself to answer that question. Will you be satisfied with Krishna? Can Krishna actually fulfill your relationship quest? As the night ended for our program last night, I was hearing the chanting of the devotees. So nice, so heart-touching. I said, yes, Krishna is there in that chanting. He is acting in relationship. The chanting was such a call for Krishna's mercy. I said, yes, Krishna is there. He's acting. The more you chant Krishna's name, the more Krishna is there. The more you call out to the Lord with helpless devotion, the more the Lord is there. Relationship. So Prahlad is dramatically presenting the relationship. This is the way it is. It's not that Lord Nrsingadev doesn't know these things, but Lord Nrsingadev has given Prahlad the opportunity to declare it boldly for the sake of everyone else. I am your unmotivated servant. You're my eternal master. There's no need of our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master. And I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. How's that for a very concise, powerful presentation? Prahlad's statement causes us to think about the natural position of the Lord and the natural position of a living being. What we are doing now, is that natural? In terms of our conditioned existence, I'm referring to. Think about it. What you think is so natural could be so artificial. Your ambitions, your hopes, your expectations, your plans could be completely artificial. Dare you think like that? That takes some courage to face the music of your life. And it's hard because the samsara bij is in the heart, forcing you to remain attached to a sinking ship. That seed of lusty desires in the heart is pushing you to remain attached to the body and things in relation to the body. No, no, don't give up. Don't let go. Stay in it. Stay invested. Don't jump back. Don't become too critical. Keep your heart your energy's invested in samsara. There'll be some returns. Of course, there'll always be some setbacks, but there'll be good returns also. Anyway, setbacks are a part of life. If you're a real human being with wholesomeness, you just accept the setbacks. It's all a learning experience. What are you supposed to learn? I can't tell you. But anyway, it's a learning experience. Just hang in there. Put on some good pop music, whatever you want to listen to. Get reassurance. How about your favorite song? Your favorite musician? Your favorite band is coming to town next week. It only costs, what, $50 to see them? How much? Anyone know? Sam? No one knows? $80. It's worth it to see your heroes. They'll soothe you. They'll make it all right. All together, you'll rejoice in a musical celebration of life. Or there'll be that one person who certainly will come your way one day. That one person will just solve and soothe all your aches and pains. Will be so understanding. It's going to happen. Don't worry. It's going to happen. Don't give up. Keep the faith. This is the samsara bij in action. This seed of material desires in the core of the heart. It's pushing the whole process of repeated birth and death. It's spinning the wheel. You want to know why the wheel is turning? It's because of that seed in the heart. We need to clarify our position. What is the relationship? Conditioned existence means countless persons, living entities, just walking around with no conception of their relationship to the supreme source of all energy. They don't even think about it. And if they do think about it, it's in very primitive terms. Their knowledge of the science of God is primitive at best. But here you see Prahlad Maharaj speaking to Sri Nadahari, the Supreme Lord who's taken this inconceivable form of Adbhuta Singha, this wondrous inconceivable form of half man, half lion. And Prahlad Maharaj is declaring, what is bhakti? He's doing it in such a powerfully enlivening way. So we'll never forget. Lord Chaitanya has told us, the living entity is eternally the servant of Krishna. Jivera Swarupoi, Krishna Nichadas. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has said, Bhoktaram Yagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshranam. I'm the proprietor of all planets, the enjoyer of all sacrifices. So this is reality. This is nature, the natural thing. We are eternally the servants of Krishna. Krishna is eternally the master. That is the natural thing. Now, how are we living an unnatural life? That's another thing. Let us listen to these very deep points that Srila Prabhupada is making in this purport to where Prahlad Maharaj asserts the relationship, the way it goes on. If this relationship continues, then real happiness exists eternally between the master and servant. You don't find the happiness outside of the relationship between the Supreme Lord and the devotee. Whether it's by mystic yoga or jnana, metaphysical speculation, or the gross karmic activities of today, you won't find the real happiness. Real happiness is by definition contained in the relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. And that relationship is one of service. Unfortunately, When this eternal relationship is disturbed, the living entity wants to become separately happy and thinks that the master is his order supplier. All right, let's focus on that. A disturbed relationship with Krishna. What are the symptoms of your having a disturbed relationship with Krishna? You think, I'm going to be happy separately on my own. I've got my plans, my ambitions. It's me. That means disturbed relationship. I've got my body. I've got my mind. I've got my friends and relatives. I've got this world. I've got hopes and dreams, ambitions. This means disturbed relationship. You want to become separately happy, irrespective of your relationship with Krishna, the Supreme Whole. And it seems so natural, doesn't it? I've got my own plans. I've got my own dreams. I've got my own ambitions. Everyone else does too. So what's the big deal? What's wrong? How can you act without considering your relationship to the Supreme Source of you and everything else, everyone else? How can you act? You can't. You've got to take that relationship into account. That's real holism. How do you take everything into consideration? The problem with ecology as known today is it just focuses on a tiny part of the whole puzzle, a tiny sliver of total reality. Say, let's get in balance with that. What about balancing with the source of all energies? Well, those are the big questions. Don't worry about that. Meanwhile, right now the air is polluted, the rivers are polluted, there's global warming. So let's just think about this, that our eternal relationship with Krishna is disturbed by that samsara bij, that seed of material enjoyment in the heart, which only by Lord Chaitanya's mercy will that seed be eradicated. Therefore, we're so determined to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. We want to catch the attention of Chaitanya Nitai. The more we follow Lord Chaitanya's instruction, Yare deko tare koho Krishna upadesh. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, teach them Krishna upadesh, the instructions of Krishna. That's Lord Chaitanya's, and that's his order to us. By fulfilling that order, you are surrendering to Krishna. Sarva dharmam prajajamamekam sharanam. So you want to become separately happy. And if you do become a bit religious, as conventionally known, you want the Lord to become your order supplier. Give me this, give me that. Oh God, please do this for me. That's as best as religion gets. I remember when I was a little boy, 5 years old. Four or five years old. If I would lose my house keys, then I would always pray to God, oh God, help me to find my house keys. If I find my house keys, I promise I will glorify you all day. Well, you know, that's what they taught you in church, you know. God gives the blessings. So I thought, yeah, okay, I can't find my house keys. Oh God, help me find my house keys. If I find them, I promise you, I'll glorify you all day. I'll learn another Bible verse. That's as best as it gets, ordinarily. You want the master to be your order supplier. Give us the daily bread. The great baker concept. And you don't see that the Lord is providing necessities for countless living entities. What's the big deal in providing material necessities? The big deal happens when you screw up the whole plan by your perverted desires to exploit and enjoy. You disturb all of nature. And then you've got to go begging, give the daily bread. And the daily bread's already there in a natural way, but you disturb that whole natural presentation. Mm-hmm. In this way, there cannot be happiness. Nor should the master cater to the desires of the servant. If he does, he's not the real master. The real master commands, you must do this, and the real servant immediately obeys the order. Unless this relationship between the Supreme Lord and the subordinate living entity is established, there can be no real happiness. That is yoga. That is knowledge. Now you might say, but the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the subordinate living entity, you must do this, the real master commands, and the real servant immediately obeys the order. Well, that just sounds a bit severe. Sounds like kind of primitive religion from, dark ages, Why does God want to order us? That sounds real authoritarian and, dictatorship. That doesn't sound like a real loving relationship. God ordering, you must do this, and the real servant immediately complies. Ooh, it sounds almost as bad as hell. Why can't we have more of a relationship of dialogue with God? I remember once in our first loft in Ponsonby. We had Gornatide, he's an altar upstairs. So one lady came, she went upstairs and came down 15 minutes later and announced, yes. Very nice people you have up there. I was dialoguing with them. Because that was the New Age fad then. We dialogue with others, So I was dialoguing with them. I was dialoguing with them. equals, having exchanges. Each one's thoughts are equally valuable. I was dialoguing with them. So that's how many people like to think about, relationship with the Supreme Lord. It's one of dialogue, Well, I think you should do like this, and you do a bit of what I say, I'll do a bit of what you say. But this sounds scary. The real master commands, you must do this, and the real servant immediately obeys the order. Ooh. It sounds like some stuff you'd hear in an old Christian church full of old ladies. Not full of old ladies, with 10 old ladies there and an old priest, an old vicar. Yes? That's our conception. When you don't know Krishna, you'll say like that. You'll have that fear. But when you know what is Krishna, how will you take this? The real master commands, you must do this. What does the real master command? What does Krishna command? You must have the best pleasure. That's the command. When he says, surrender to me, he's saying, take the best pleasure. But our mind is so perverted. A command. Oh, an order. Oh. Horrible. The order is to have the best pleasure. Surrender to me. Come to me means have the best pleasure. Like suppose I say, tonight I order all of you to attend a pizza and ice cream party here. We say, ooh, an order. Ooh, we don't like that. Ooh, very authoritarian, very archaic, dark ages. How many will say that? What do you say, Rory? No way. You say, yeah, you can order like that every day. Can you imagine Dwayne grumbling? Oh, that's what I don't like about here. It's just too many orders, Now we've been ordered to have a pizza and ice cream party. No, let the orders come, right? So similarly, Krishna is ordering you. Take the supreme pleasure. That's what surrender to Krishna means. But we're so perverted in our mind, we get a, ooh, Krishna's going to spoil our real fun. What real fun? Tell me, what is it? What do you have to lose? What are you holding on to? Where is the fun that Krishna is spoiling by his order to surrender to? Michelle, where is it? Emma, where is it? You tried. You failed, right? Admit it. Everyone tried. We all failed. All losers. Admit it. And in that humble admittance, take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. Then you become the biggest winners. Because you were afraid to surrender to Krishna, Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya and packages the same request a different way. Taste it first, and then we'll talk. As I explained so many times, Krishna is serious business. No taste until you sign the contract. And so many persons misunderstood Krishna. They're afraid of his order to surrender to him. They don't understand he's saying, surrender to pleasure. Surrender to me. So that same Krishna comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he says, we won't worry about the contract now. Just taste and taste and taste. I'm sure you'll agree, it's so nice. And after you've tasted sufficiently, then you sign the contract, okay? So let us remember our natural position and Krishna's natural position. And particularly, Prahlad Maharaj not only wants to be the servant of a lord, but he wants to go one step further. How do you go one step further than being the servant of the Lord? Who knows? Thomas? Right. As Lord Shiva explained to his wife, Parvati, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param Tasmat Pratanam Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. Of all types of worship of the Supreme Lord, the highest type of worship, he says, my dear Devi, he's speaking to his wife, you should know the highest type of Vishnu worship is worship of the devotee of the Lord. So Prahlad Maharaj has also prayed to Lord of Shikadev, your servant, Narada Muni, picked me up from material condition. I was blindly following the general population, blindly walking on the path of the snakes. But your servant, Narada Muni, picked me up. How could I ever leave his service? Please give me the benediction of being the servant of the servant. So Prahlad is showing us the prescribed method of devotional service. Now, if you approach the Lord with material desires, how does he respond? He is a person. So he will refuse to become your personal master in those circumstances. What does that mean? You see, everyone is maintained by material nature. So in that way, the Lord is maintaining everyone. But if you want a personal relationship, then you approach the Lord without material desires. As soon as you want to make him your order supplier, he backs off from the personal relationship. And you just get maintained by material nature. The Lord immediately refuses to become the master of such a motivated devotee. Those material desires disturb the relationship. The Lord backs off. Just like if you have a relationship with someone and you feel that they're starting to use you, you're giving too much, you're not getting enough in return, you naturally start to back off. Many of you experience that. Even though you may maintain the relationship, you become a little distant. There's a part of you locked inside that you reserve. You're not as free and spontaneous and acting with abandon when you think, you've got some motive. So similarly, Krishna being Purushottam, the Supreme Person, when he sees you have a particular material motive in the relationship, he backs off a bit. In other words, he won't become your complete partner in the relationship. Krishna is the most expert in relationships. When you start thinking like that, then you can properly understand the science of God. But now, Prahlad is going to ask for a benediction. What kind of benediction is it, though? Prahlad has already just totally demolished any conception of worshiping the Supreme Lord for material benefit. He's clarified the relationship, and now he's going to present his request for a benediction. Yadi dasyasi me kaman varam stvam varadarshapa kamanam pradyasam roham bhavatas tu vrinevranam. O my Lord, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your Lordship that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. You can give me that. Within the core of my heart, where all that trouble is going on with us, that samsara bij, that seed of material desires, seed of lusty desires. Prahlad is getting right to the point. Hridi, within the core of my heart, I pray to your Lordship, there'll be no material desires. That is the positive thing that Prahlad wants to possess. It's not that we say nothing, nothing, nothingness, voidness. No. The positive thing is no material desires in the heart. Now, if we say no material desires in the heart, does that mean the heart is empty? That is your fear, I know. If we get rid of all material desires, what will be left to us? We may not know ourselves anymore. How will we function with no material desires? We'll just disappear. No. You cannot remain void, as Prabhupada writes here. You must possess something. Therefore, when a devotee says, I pray that within the core of my heart there be no material desires, the devotee is saying, simply let there be the desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That desire is not material. See, when a devotee prays, may there be no material desires in my heart, the devotee understands that desire cannot be extinguished. So if you get rid of all the material desires, the spiritual desire to serve Krishna will spring forth unimpeded. An impersonalist or avoidist, however, prays, no self, no desires, no individuality. Suicide. But when a devotee prays, no material desires, the devotee knows that there'll be the pure spiritual desire left. So Prahlad Maharaj says, as Srila Prabhupada quotes here, paraphrases here, if I must take some benediction from you, I pray that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. All right, we'll stop here and ask for any questions. Yes.
How to deal with someone who's very enthusiastic about material life and immediately gets defensive when you point out any problems in material life, saying, oh, stress is good. Stress helps us achieve more, and immediately get really defensive and almost angry.
Fill their mouth with prasad. Don't feed milk to a serpent. if they're coming to associate with devotees, taking prasad and in some way doing some service, let them go on doing that. And gradually their intelligence will awaken. You don't know how long it takes for some people for the process to manifest its results. Just like in Auckland, at the Unitech Polytech campus, big campus there, the head of the student organizations or something like that was so eager to have us distribute prasad there. And he arranged it all so nicely. And whenever, you know, on the days when the devotees are distributing prasad on the campus, he just comes running. He's got a special bowl and spoon. So, our Vijayapati said to him, we're going to take over the whole campus. So many students are coming. So the head of the student organization said, fine, it's fine with me. He just had his bowl and spoon. Fill it up. Now, it turns out that some years back, while he was a philosophy student at the university, he got a book. So maybe in this lifetime, he's not going to, you know, become a full practitioner. But just look at the service he's doing because he read a book. Now he's a prasad addict. He's helping the devotees have their presence on campus. You know, he sets a good example for all the other people at the university, coming running with his special bowl and spoon. As soon as the devotees set up, he's coming. So, you know, you don't know how Krishna will arrange through all these people who get books. You don't know. Some will come forth immediately. Others will wait some time. Therefore, we just distribute Krishna consciousness profusely and let the chips fall where they may. We just flood everywhere and everyone, and we'll let Lord Chaitanya sort it all out. Of course, we then make, after letting the flood go everywhere, we make ourselves available to cultivate the flood. You know, we take care of the flood victims. Oh, you've been drenched. Come right in. This is the ecstatic life of the servant of Lord Chaitanya. Yes? Michelle?
How does Krishna not lose interest in his pastimes? He's performing them eternally.
You're assuming that if you do something again and again, it becomes stale. But that assumption is based on time. Because all actions in the material world take place within time. Therefore, there's a deterioration. But Krishna's pastimes are beyond time. There's no deterioration. Therefore, Krishna is known as Nitya Nutan, ever fresh, eternally ever fresh. In the spiritual world, when flowers are picked for Krishna's garland, the flowers don't deteriorate. All of Krishna's activities, there's no tinge of time. Therefore, there's no deterioration. That's the nature of the spiritual energy. There's no beginning or end, so there's no question of things becoming less interesting. In fact, the nature of the spiritual energy is that it's always increasing. Krishna has unlimited desires, and those desires are always increasing unlimitedly. You can't conceive of that. Krishna's pastimes are always increasing in pleasure. That's the nature of the spiritual energy, to expand unlimitedly. That's what your heart wants to do. Your heart wants to expand the loving vibration unlimitedly. And because you can't do that in the material world, you're frustrated. That's the story of every conditioned soul. You've got this thing in your heart that wants to expand the loving and in, the loving and the pleasure potency. Let it expand without any barriers. But there's always barriers, always limitations, always hallucinations. But in the spiritual world, your loving propensity can expand unlimitedly without impediment. And Krishna is the most expert at that. So there's no way that Krishna's pastimes become repetitive and stale for him. Repetitiveness and staleness is a symptom of the material energy, where everything has a beginning and end. Creation, maintenance, annihilation. Sattva-gun, Raja-gun, Tamagun. You can prove that to yourself right here in this world. How can you prove that to yourself? Read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotion again and again and again. See what happens. Ever fresh. Chant Hare Krishna again and again and again. Ever fresh. Prove it to yourself. Be a scientist. Don't believe. Prove it. Real ecology, real environmental consciousness means how to deal with eternal ever freshness. Now, where is the ecological science for that? In the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, all of nature is a person. The river is a person. The trees are persons. Everything is person. There's nothing that's matter. Everything is pure consciousness. And everything and everyone is a devotee of Krishna. That's the best ecology. When Krishna walks through the forest, the trees bow down their branches, heavily laden with fruit, at Krishna's feet. That's real environmentalism. When he walks near the Yamuna River, the river tries to flow closer to his feet. When Krishna wants to rest on the bank of the river already knows that, and with its hands, with its waves, it piles up soft sand on the beach. So there is no question of Krishna's pastimes becoming repetitive. But you have that fear because of conditioned life. Thinking, how can Krishna do the same thing again and again? Universe after universe. Wouldn't you get tired of it? But you're missing the vision of the love between Krishna and his devotees, which is ever increasing. In other words, Krishna is so good at pleasure that he can apparently do the same thing again and again, and the pleasure has increased unlimitedly. That's how good he is. What do you think the gopis say in the middle of the night? Krishna, haven't you called us out to the forest before? No way. It's the spiritual energy ever increasing in attractiveness. Yes.
Pretty much in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says in the purport that being personalized path should not be encouraged at any time. And then later on he says that meditating on oneself as a supreme is okay if you cannot practice devotional service. And I was wondering how to preach that in
Meditating on yourself as a little Krishna, you can do that. See, that's ahangrahopasana. You meditate on yourself in a preliminary way as a particle of the Supreme Lord. At least you recognize that you have soul and spiritual consciousness. You can't do that in this day and age, though, because as soon as you start to meditate on yourself, you immediately think you're God, and you think that's the end of it. Whereas what Srila Prabhupada is describing, that purport, is a stepping stone process. Okay, I am conscious. In my consciousness, I am the all in all. But you're not supposed to stop there. You're supposed to go the next step. What is the supreme consciousness that I am part of? So it's not just meditate on yourself as the supreme, and that's it. No, that's part of a gradual process. But in this day and age of Kali Yuga, there's no time for such gradual processes. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita about that gradual Gyani process? Bahunam jamanamante ganavamam prapadite. After many births and deaths of that kind of stuff, the Gyani finally realizes Krishna is everything. Vasudeva sarvamiti. Generally, with those who are spouting impersonalist rhetoric, you can try to point out the fallacies. If they don't accept, just give them some prasad. Let them cram a pizza into their mouth or something. I remember when Hariman Krishna was coming here as a guest. He had been affiliated with some Mayavadi organization. And so he invited one of his friends from that organization. She had been raised in Mayavad since birth. They have a school system. You know the name of the school? They have a school. What's it called? Right. You know, the parents bring up their children in this way. It's real hardcore Mayavad. And so she came. And they claimed to accept the Vedas. So I said, well, let's talk Bhagavad Gita. And I had her read from Bhagavad Gita. You know, the purport. Evaham jatunasam natom neme janata. But Krishna says, never was there a time when I was not an individual. Never was there a time when Arjuna was not an individual. Never was there a time when all these kings on the battlefield were not individuals. Three times. Nah. I said, well, I had her read that. I had to read the purport where Srila Prabhupada says, you know, describes how Mayavadis think that individuality is just a temporary thing. Here Krishna is clearly saying that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally individual. The living entities are eternally individuals. She just read it and her voice was cracking and like, as she's reading it out loud, like, she actually started to shake, like, because it was everything that she wasn't taught. It was going against everything that had been ingrained into her. We're all one. We are God. And here she's reading. And she claimed to be a follower of the Vedas. And here she's reading Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna is just explaining so clearly. She actually, her voice was shaking. She was trembling. And she barely made it to the end of the purport. And she just disappeared. Is too much. So because her family claimed to accept the Vedas as authority, therefore it was easy for me to deal with. Do you accept Bhagavad Gita? Yes. What is Krishna saying here? Anything else? Yes.
The one prayer for that marriage, he says, I'm not afraid of eternal existence. And then yesterday, we heard
He's presenting spiritual, pure devotional fear from different angles. I'm not afraid of material existence. It's like a child saying, as long as father's here, I'm not afraid. Then he looks at it another angle. That looking at material nature and its power, I'm very afraid. These are different angles for glorifying Krishna. But his glorification of Krishna is eternal. So it's just a full emotional presentation. I'm not afraid. Then I am afraid. But it's all purely devotional. He was saying, I'm not afraid, in that he was expressing his concern for the conditioned souls. I'm not afraid for me, but I'm afraid for them. And later, taking the part out of humility of a conditioned soul, he says, I'm afraid of material existence. So these are all just various spiritual emotions. Yes. Very much. Krishna is in the heart of the devotee. When he notices your sincere desire that others become Krishna conscious, then he acts from within the heart of that person and says, haven't you heard such a sincere presentation? Don't you want this? But then again, Krishna is independent. He can do whatever he likes, sometimes without any apparent cause. Again, acting from within someone's heart, cause them to restart their devotional service, re-engage in devotional service. We just want to play our part to the max. That's all that's expected of us. Krishna will do his part. Yes. Well, of course, whatever service you do for Krishna is your eternal asset. However you try to glorify Krishna, that will remain in your bank account. Yes, devotional service has eternal effects. So in that way, you can see the effects always increase. Just like the message of the parampara, it's like a mango passed down from Krishna down through the chain of his representatives. But as the mango passes through each step, it gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter because of all the contributions, devotional contributions made by each link in the chain. Things are always increasing. It's always amazing for devotees when they meet someone who became Krishna conscious as a result of something that the devotee did ages ago. And then you start to realize, what's going on here? I didn't think it was such a big deal what I did. Does that happen to any of you? What?
But the other thing would stop dutifully and otherwise try to get
Yes. Any other examples of that? Yes? Where is James?
I'm not sure where he is.
Okay.
And he brought a friend along who gave me $100 for a bottle of beer. And then saw him.
We just want to do our humble part as servants of Lord Chaitanya. We don't really know the full impact of what we're doing. In material life, you don't know the full impact of all the reactions you're causing. And here, as humble servants of Lord Chaitanya, it's impossible for us to see the whole picture. It's too big. We're so tiny. But we just want to do our humble part. Play our role fully. You can aspire to understand as much as Lord Chaitanya wants you to understand. You're tiny. You can't be omniscient. But by the grace of the omniscient, you can know whatever the supreme omniscient wants you to know. That's all we aspire for. In Goloka Vrindavan, they don't want to know the whole picture. They don't want to know it. They have the whole picture there as their lover, their friend, their son. They don't want to know the whole picture. Even when they see the whole picture, they, what is going on here? It's like Mother Yashoda. She looked in Krishna's mouth. She saw the whole picture. She said, oh, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with my child? She sees the whole universe in his mouth. Am I dreaming? No, I can't be dreaming. I'm awake. Am I deranged? No, I'm in good health. I'm not mentally deranged. Maybe it's the demigods playing tricks with me. But I'm just a simple woman. Why would the demigods want to waste time with me? Oh, this must just be, this vision I saw of the whole universe in the mouth of Krishna must be just due to the mystic power of my little boy. So her maternal affection, her vatsalya prema, was not disturbed in the slightest. She said, what is this I'm seeing? Or like Nanda Maharaj tells Uddhava, all right, you may say he's my son. You may say Krishna is Lord, but I say he's my son. You're entitled to your perspective, but he's my son. Then Nanda Maharaj says, anyway, all glories to your Lord Krishna. In other words, but he's my son. So they don't want to see the whole picture. Better than seeing the whole picture is love. Krishna is the conclusion of all knowledge. So if you're playing in the pastures with Krishna, if you're dancing with the conclusion of all knowledge, what do you need to know? Krishna is showing you loving is more, even more fun than knowing. Better than knowing that I'm God is to love me. Dance with me. Climb on my shoulders as my friend. Chastise me as my parent. That's better than knowing I'm God. Yes? Krishna arranges everything according to your taste. But Generally, Lord Chaitanya is spreading Braj Bhakti. Generally, like Krishna. But there were devotees of Lord Chaitanya who were attached to Ram. But generally, Lord Chaitanya and his associates, they are focused on Braj Bhakti. Yes. They need the association of devotees to increase their nectarian experience of reading Prabhupada's books, to inspire them to chant. It's a fact. People don't care for themselves these days. Practically, day after day, all I'm doing is pleading with people, care for yourself, care for yourself. Don't obliterate yourself. Don't hide from yourself. Care for yourself. What is your real self-interest? What is the relationship that you need? So that is the humble service that Krishna gives us. And he says, no one is more dear, nor will there ever be one more dear, than seeks to remind persons of the relationship. Care for yourself because you're part of Krishna. You never had a reason to care for yourself before. The young men have destroyed themselves. The young women have destroyed themselves through bad habits, bad pursuits. Now kindly wash yourself off, purify yourself, and care for yourself as a servant to Krishna. And we see, once the new practitioners start to care for themselves in Krishna consciousness, they become bright-faced, cheery, even jubilant. Whereas when they first came, they were morose, down in the dumps, sour, mad at the whole world. You know, no one likes me, everyone hates me, I'm going to eat some worms. I've been abused, I've been kicked around, I've been misunderstood, exploited, drained. Yes, I've seen so many of you when you came here. So sour, so down in the dumps, with a chip on your shoulder against the whole world. And then after some time, through devotional service, especially through selfless devotional service, I've seen amazing transformations. Who remembers Vishnu Maya when she first came? A gloom queen. That was bad news. Dark cloud in the sky, you know? Right? You never know it now. He's always bright-faced and rosy-cheeked and upbeat. What was she like, Kriya Ram, when she first came? What's your description? Oh, you had all those piercings on you?
Yeah.
Who else remembers her? Shriya Sarada, what was she like?
Pretty cold.
Cold. Reclusive. Reclusive. What do you remember, Krishna Loka?
I remember she was quite
closed off. You never know it now, right? Someone who's just come along like Emma, you would never believe that she could be like that. You should have seen Ram Dass 12 years ago. What year did you start? 96. 11 years ago. Is that when I went to your flat, 96? You had just bought a set of Bhagavatams, right? So I went to his flat to pay him a house call, and he very patiently showed me all his artistic pictures. And then we explained to him that, where's your life going? What are you doing? Oh, you're cleaning, you're washing and cleaning cars every day. Well, I think you can give that one a miss. I think, the world won't fall apart if you cease to do it. He told me a story about, he was, how old were you then? 19?
20.
Huh? 20. Just a few years ago, I had the most beautiful girlfriend. She was beautiful. But then she left me. She said I was too boring. I said, good on you. Praise the Lord. She left me because she said I was too boring. She was beautiful. It's Krishna's mercy. She was saving you for the Sankirtan movement. This guy's too boring. So, the more selfless our service is, the more quickly there'll be such extraordinary transformations. Already we see the evolution of Nina. So many can remember what she was doing, her beginnings. It's like that. Refugees from Kali Yuga. All right. So let us not forget that we can deal with this samsara bij, this seed of material desires in the core of the heart, if we take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. Otherwise, it's a formidable enemy. It's an overpowering enemy. And if you just forget Lord Chaitanya, you'll become discouraged. How long can I go on fighting this? Oh, it's just too much. Every day I'm being harassed. Every day you take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.